Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Welcome to the AMAA, Pioneers and Legends Archives Radio Show. Parts unknown, where we feature the personal up-to-date interviews with the pioneers and legends of sport karate and the American martial art icons. My name is Professor Gary Lee, and I am your host tonight. I'm also the founder and the curator, the gatekeeper of the Sport Karate Museum Archives, and I've been doing that for almost 19 years. I'm very honored to be on this radio blog, and I want to thank very, very personally the Who's Who in Martial Arts book, who is one of the main sponsors of the show, and the producer, Mr. Jesse Bowen, who helped curate that book and is changing the country with the advertisement of this book. Tonight we have a very special guest. I love Southern martial arts. I love Southern sport karate. And I was lucky enough to be a part of it in the 70s. And we have a very special guest tonight. His name is Mr. Sam Chapman. And I'm going to be introducing him a little bit later. But before we do, I'd like to say if anyone would like to call anybody and tell them that you're listening to a great show tonight with a great pioneer, you can call 657-383-1410 and listen. Or you can call in later about an hour or so. You can actually talk to Mr. Chapman or anybody from the radio program. We appreciate your interest, and without you, the fans, and the people who are interested in the history of the legends and masters, this show wouldn't be possible. We'd like to welcome some new sponsors tonight. We have Dr. Nick Chamberlain from the Gathering of Eagles in Dallas that will be holding August the 11th through the 12th. And also the Kempo International Hall of Fame. Always the AMAA Who's Who in Martial Arts autograph book, which features some of the top martial artists in the country. And always our friends at Black Belt Magazine, Mr. Floyd Burke and Robert Young, the editors, who've always been very supportive through the years with the Sport Karate Museum archives. We also like to feature tonight Memoirs of American Samurai, which is the new book that talks about the history and beginning of the Sport Karate Museum. And you can feature that or go to Amazon.com and look that up under Memoirs of American Samurai. Going back to our book, we have our book listed on many, many sites, particularly Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can actually go there and get the book. Our friends at Century Fitness, they listed the book also. But if you'd like to go and just look at the website and the incredible job that Monty Bowen has done to put this book out into the public, you go to www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com. Or you can call directly. He would love to hear from you, Monty Jesse Bowen, at 919-618-8075. And as always, if you'd like to find out more about what we do with the museum archives, you can go to www.sportkaratemuseum.org. You know, we got some great upcoming guests coming in, and we work hard on it every day to get the people who help create sport karate in America. And these are incredible people that are still producing martial arts in America, still in the light, and were part of the pioneers and legends back in the 60s and 70s. Some are new, like I said, some are old. And the upcoming shows will be with Bill Viola, Mr. Bruce Brucci, Mr. Jim Buten, Judge Roy Kirby's coming up in April, Mikey Rowe Moore is going to be here in 2 weeks, Mr. Bob Liker, Mr. Robert Hartfield, the takedown artist, Mr. Al Francis, Jerry Trimble Jr., the great full contact fighter, Gary Mock, Duke Tershel. What I'm looking forward to is Mr. Jim Hartley and Mr. George Clark, Green Beret, who's going to talk about the Jim Harrison lineage. Don DeVries and Richard McClain will be here next week talking about the Superfoot World Tournament that's happening March 31st, April 1st in Cleveland, Ohio. We also have some incredible ideas that are coming up that we're going to share with you a little bit later when Hachi Bowen comes back onto the air. And he tells you specifically some of the events that he's producing and the Sport Karate Museum is behind. We always want to thank you for the emails, which last week we had a great show with Colonel Phil Torres, and we're so in debt with the interview, we didn't do the emails last week. So we're going to do that this week with Mr. Chapman's interview. But we appreciate all those emails you send us, and we try to answer, and we do answer two at a time per show. We're also very excited about being on every week now, every Tuesday night, and also in our new format, which you can download through the Google app and iPhone app. And it's exciting to know that you're on 24/7, and you have featured some of the great interviews and motivations. There's Zen, there's meditation time with Hachi Bowen, there's music, there's jazz, there's spiritual, there's rock, there's oldies, there's Motown, and there's even country. We have innovational type people speaking, and we have people that are very high management into studio running, that anytime you like to better yourself or just listen to the radio program, we're on 24/7, and I'm excited about that format, and we'll talk about that just a little bit later. Well, you know, Southern Martial Arts was part of that format, and I'm going to break it up right now mentally for the people who are just listening or who understand the regions. You know, there was New York. They were in the world by themselves, okay? And then there was Midwest. Then there was, like, the Detroit area. And then there was the Northwest area in California. And then, of course, the area of Texas. And we always thought that we were kind of by ourselves. And then there was, like, the southern part. When, you know, we adopted Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. But then there was that southern region. And you're talking about Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Well, Florida, throughout the years, past years, they really turned into their own entity. But back in the days, in the 70s, there was a group of men who had vision, and they formed a group called SICA, which is the Southeastern Karate Association. And those particular men were Joe Corley, the great Joe Corley, Bill McDonald from North Carolina, Larry Reinhart from Jacksonville, Florida, by way of Tennessee. And this gentleman that we're talking tonight, my sensei, Mr. Sam Chapman, and I'd like to just give you guys a little history. You know, Mr. Sam Chapman is a Marine sergeant, retired, an American pioneer and icon in the Sport Karate Memories. And as for the archives, he was my first American karate instructor in the States. I'm very, very proud of that. I got him as my first American instructor. You know, he molded me into a pretty decent black belt point fighter in the early 70s, too. And it was a time of early beginnings. You know, equipment was being introduced. In some cities or one city, there may only be one or two karate studios. And there was no American karate studios anywhere. I mean, Ernie Lieb just started the AKA, and it was just started. And there was Dan Anderson out there in, you know, northwestern America. He was doing American karate. He was definitely a pioneer in school operations, tournament producing, and building karate organizations like SICA in the 70s. You know, Mr. Chapman was a top-rated middleweight fighter also, pioneer of full-contact karate bouts, who also became a great coach and mentor, teaching and molding the greats like world champion Jerry Rome and legendary fighter Bobby Tucker, that critics, magazine editors have wrote he was the fastest black belt point fighter alive. Now, Bobby Tucker earned the first Joe Louis PKA Award, and being a rated, top-rated fighter for years by Karate Illustrated magazine, they would travel and fight and train. They would travel, train, and fight. Mr. Chapman would also coach and mentor other great black belts. Lawrence, let's see, Sherman Lawrence, I'm sorry, excuse me, Lawrence Huff, Will Wright, Gary Landreth, Greg Suther, Greg Cromer, Blaine Silver, Carlos Howard. He still runs the famous karate school of Greenville. You know, Mr. Chapman is still instrumental in the community. He's a kid's advocate and really cares and lets his spiritual growth influence kids every day in lives. And he's a director of a youth service that works very hard with hard-to-reach kids. He's still a huge part of the future of sport karate. Is an original history general for the Sport Karate Museum Archives and vice president of the South Carolina Black Belt Hall of Fame, or Karate Hall of Fame. He and the directors, Bruce Bucci, Keith Vitale, Bobby Tucker, and President Mike Genova, they're setting new grounds for induction into a real Black Belt Hall of Fame, such as having 25 legitimate years in the martial arts and must be at least 35 years old. And this is one of my favorites. You must have a criminal background check of each inductee. I want you to really enjoy this Parts Unknown live interview with an American icon of sport karate, Mr. Sam Chapman, Sensei. Well, Sensei, are you on the line, sir?
I am, Gary. Thank you for such a marvelous introduction. It makes me think how God had his hand over me all those years, discerning what am I doing. Well, and I thank you for just a mention of those things.
Thank you. Thank you for being a part of my life and just being part of my journey when I first got here. You know, that was an amazing time back in the 70s, and we didn't realize that, well, we didn't really talk about history. We just talked about what was going to happen, you know, get ready for the next tournament or
true.
Whatever came our way. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, first of all, I want you to know how exciting it is for Hunchy Bowen and myself to have you on the show and to be part of that Southern martial arts. Now, before I ask you some of the hard questions, I'm going to talk about Virginia first and that area, Washington, D.C. Of course, that was a June Reed, Jeff Smith, Michael Coles, I mean, all those in John, all that area up there. And then you had North Carolina, and you think about Bill McDonald, Charlie June, Tony Lopez, Demetrius Oaktree, Edwards. Then, of course, you had, I'm going to skip South Carolina right now. Then you had Georgia. Of course, you had the great Joe Corley and Ben Kiker and all those guys. I mean, an incredible group of Georgia fighters. I'm going to do an interview with Jerry Trimble here pretty soon. He was a great fighter. And then Florida, our friends in Florida, Larry Reinhart, Ron Slinker, Steve Shepard, Bill Clark. I got to say, Bill Balls Clark. That was his nickname. Yeah. I remember we went down to Florida one tournament. I can't remember which one it was. The first thing I saw him was he pulled up in a red Corvette, and he had this T-shirt on, and he had balls and four letters on the back of his shirt. And then his gi top was red and had the same thing on the back. And look what he turned out to be, a great leader in the Taekwondo community and innovator and mentor for so many people. But he was a good fighter, too. He ended up becoming a great referee, judge for some of the major fights in the country. But let's we're talking about Sam Chapman tonight, but I wanted people to know about Southern martial arts and how you were instrumental in helping change a lot of that. But before we do, I want to know, who is Sensei Sam Chapman? I mean, how did you get started? I knew that you were a military man. Let's talk about that a little bit. And then your first instructor, Mr. Morris, talk a little bit about how you got started and let people know what created the Sam Chapman we have today.
Well, Gary, I graduated from Liberty High School in 1962 and went into the Marine Corps. Of course, before that, the only martial arts we saw was judo chops on TV and stuff like that. So, but when I went into boot camp at Parris Island in June 30th, 1962, we had about 6 or 8 hours of what called hand-to-hand combat training. That really whet my appetite for the martial arts. Later, after I had left Parris Island and was transferred to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, from a permanent duty station, when I got there, they were already packed up, ready to go, because it was the start of the Cuban Missile Crisis. I had no idea what that was about. But we were loaded on board ship, taken out. on the LST, land and tank ship, and my squad leader had studied karate in Okinawa. And he took me under his wings and on board ship for 45 days we were there. We'd go out on the tank deck. That's where they kept the tanks and the Amtraks. And we'd find a place and work out there. So they got me started. And I continued studying with him until he left. And I did a few classes under a great judo instructor named Ernie Cates. He was a national champion at that time. And I had a chance to go in and work out a little bit with his students. That, again, got me some experience that I could use. My training partners at home, I had an oak tree about 8 inches in diameter, and that was my kicking and punching partner. It helped to toughen me up a little bit. I did occasionally find people to spar with and work out with. But it wasn't until I was discharged. I went to Parris Island from Camp Lejeune and spent 18 months there as a primary marksmanship instructor. Part of that training and part of the training I did there was for 18 months as taking the recruits from the mainland out to the rifle range and having them there with me for 2 weeks, teach them how to shoot. And it was a great experience and a great part of my life. When I was discharged in 66, I came back to Greenville, went to work for an insurance company, and was riding through Greenville one day, and I saw a sign, karate. I went and introduced myself to the instructor, who was a former Marine as well. His name was Ron Mars. And I just fell in love there with the studio. It wasn't a fancy one. It was hard work, no air condition. We worked hard. And I was able to make my black belt in 18 months, which I think was an incredible feat at that time.
Yes, sir.
I went on, and within a matter of months, I had opened a studio myself in Liberty. That's my hometown, teaching for the recreation department. The only drawback for that was when I was in the gym teaching, sometimes there'd be people playing basketball. And it's hard to focus when you got all this noise going on. So I determined to find a midway point between Greenville and Liberty. And so I settled in Easley. I opened a professional commercial building school there, a karate studio. And one of my first students to sign up was Bobby Tucker. He came along with some bus drivers from Carolina High School, and he fell right into it. And within a matter of a couple of days and weeks, I knew he has a very special talent, and also the desire. Yes, and yes. He was able to just do everything he should have done and did, and he did it with a great attitude.
Wow, you know. The people that you've touched, Coach, has been pretty incredible. And as I was, I'll share with the listeners, we're going to talk about particularly Bobby and some of the stories a little bit later. But when you came to Greenville and you after you worked with Mr. Morris and you found your studio, the first studio wasn't the karate school Greenville that I'm aware of in Augusta where I was with you at. You were before somewhere else. Where was you located before there?
We were down near Cleveland Park. And then from right on the outskirts is Cleveland Park. He later opened a studio in Cleveland Park at one of the used to be a horse stable. And then he eventually went to 109 Augusta Street. And he was there until he went back to Georgia in 1972-73. And I moved from Easley to the studio there, and took over. And brought 35 of my students, and he had 25 there. So that gave me a base of about 55 people or thereabouts. Some left because of difference in instruction, but it was okay. It was a hard time.
You're telling me that you actually moved into a horse stable that was a karate studio?
Yes.
They cleaned it up, of course, right?
Oh yes, you go where the martial arts action is. Okay, it might be a stable. You know?
Yes, sir.
You're
yes,
talking
sir.
Back in days. when you may go months and months and months without any kind of tournament competition because they wasn't happening like they are today. And when
right.
you're on schedule, you heard about it.
I want to say that that back in Greenville, back in the day when you first started school, there was, like I said, there was only a couple schools, and one particularly was not so much a rival, but I want to talk about Billy Hong and that history, and then throw in the Bobby Tucker story. I want to throw that in too. But Billy Hong was the other school that taught Taekwondo, and you were teaching American Karate. Tell me about that in-city rival a little bit.
Oh, it was great. We'd have people walking in from talking about how bad they were from the Hong studio, and they were always that constant rival. But one day, Billy, Master Hong, brought his best black belt to my studio and challenged me to let his black belt fight Bobby. I said, well, it's up to Bobby to fight or not. And they did, but it was on their part, it was to really do some damage and try to put us out of business. We recognized that right off, but it didn't work out that way. And then later on, years later, Mr. Hung had a karate tournament and invited us to come. We were the only ones in the Greenville area that were invited. And we won every division we competed in. And then later on, once, you know, he died in the plane crash in 1981, actually shot down by the Russians, I think. But his black belt students thought maybe it was going to take over and have everybody come to them, but it didn't work out that way. I had several black belts to come and start to learn how to fight, and they became great friends.
Well, like I said, sometimes you become best friends with the people that you have the most conflict with.
True.
And back then, when there was only two karate studios, and one thought what America thought was real karate because they were just understanding the ignorance of what it was, Taekwondo, you were teaching real karate. You had to show the Kanpei system. You've been training with we're going to talk about Ernie here in a minute. But I'm going to stay on Bobby a minute for a second. Now, Bobby, wow. I have many visions in my head about Mr. Tucker, but one particular one is that, like clockwork, every Thursday night he would come into the karate school, Greenville. He'd move his hands a little bit, shake his feet a little bit, wrap his hands, and beat up everybody. And
that's right.
And you go home like it was no big deal. But I to this day, I don't think anyone ever, even those workouts, beat him in points. After we work out and we do the points, Bobby was so incredibly fast. And I did a poll, and I'm still working on that poll to make it public. And the poll was that who was the fastest person in black belt martial arts of all time? Well, Bobby Arnell falls in that category as front like round kick. Howard Jackson falls in with his blitz. But the person that made everyone's poll in the top three was Mr. Bobby Tucker. And some of the things that you guys practice to make him so incredibly fast, and I want to hear a couple stories and talk about the feather. I want to hear about the feather.
Oh, yeah. We would string a small cable across the width of the karate studio, several of those. Then we'd hang a single feather on the string and have it so we could adjust up and down. And the idea was that you throw your kick so fast, or punch, you could do it with punch or kick, whatever. But the idea is that you withdrew your hand so quick from that punch or kick, you created a vacuum and caused a feather to follow your hand or foot back. It's not to push it away, but snap the foot so fast that you create that vacuum and snatches the feather. And we'd work on that and work on drills like that all the time. Of course, we'd kick at each other that way, too, getting as close as possible without hurting, without hitting. But having the ability to hit, and you did, of course, take the heavy bag and hand targets to practice your power. But the same concept, you just move the point of focus from an inch or so in front of the target to where you're kicking through the target and still have that withdrawal, that quick withdrawal of the foot. They could do double or triple kicks, and he was great at that.
Well, what tournament did you see? You mentioned to me that he just couldn't get a point because he was so fast, the judges couldn't see the front leg. And then I want to hear your story about Bobby.
Yeah, there were several tournaments in the very beginning when he made black belt that would go, and he'd literally kick people in the head so quick the judges just like they never saw it, never blinked an eye. It was so quick. And it was a while before they began to realize, hey, this guy's kicking people in the head. It took a while. Now, I saw him go through in 1974, 75 at the Battle Atlanta division and beat several other rated first place, top 10 fighters, just like they wasn't there at all.
Wow. I tell me your favorite Bobby Tucker story, your very absolute favorite one.
My favorite Bobby Tucker story. Well,
put you on the spot. Parts unknown, sir.
All right. Well, what we would do is in those days we'd go out. We did demonstrations at every mall that opened in Greenville. We did high schools, wherever there was somebody who wanted us to do part of a demonstration, we did. And we'd go out and set up a schedule for maybe as many as 10 in a schedule and then go for an entire weekend like that. And every demonstration, we had breaking. We'd break boards on cement slabs. And the idea was that you broke them. If you didn't break them with your hand or foot, you had to break them with your head. So you had that motivation to make sure you got your foot or your hand through the target. And that was always a treat to see Bobby break. You wouldn't think that he would have that ability, but he could punch, he could kick. 149
he was,
pounds.
145, right? 140?
145, 149, I think, was the top of the weight.
So he'd be the lightweight, you'd be the middleweight. And you guys would travel everywhere. And now I'm going to ask you bluntly, how did SICA form and what was your vision of SICA when you formed the organization of putting tournaments together?
Well, Bob and I had been doing some travels, not only here, but out. I said back in those days, there were only a few tournaments held in this area for the entire year. So if you wanted to get competition, you had to go someplace else. And that's what we did. And then Joe Corley came up with a concept, Leigh Reinhart, Art Heller, and Bill McDonald, and myself. We started the SCKA, and we sanctioned tournaments in Virginia and North Carolina and South Carolina, even Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and entire Southeast area. We'd go in and have a tournament on Saturday, and if there was anyone in that area had black belts to test, then we'd test them the next day on Sunday for the black belt. We also had training seminars for potential referees, and that's something we need to get back to. We have men and women now who are, quote, professing black belts who don't know anything about point sparring or how to fight or how to judge. We need to get back to having efficient judges by having them train to do that. We've gotten away from that.
Well, Sensei Sika was the Southeastern Karate Association, correct?
Southeast Karate Association.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Southeast, not Eastern. Yes.
East. Okay, Southeast.
Tell you how great it was. When Ernie Lee came down in 1973, matter of fact, we had sanctioned it through the AKA, AKS, we had the Southeast American Karate System. That's what it was. And the Southeast American Karate System for his system. Tournament here, we drew fighters, Maryland, from Maine, from all over. Actually, one of the worst tournaments I thought I would ever have was at the Textile Hall. And it's a big, big open exhibition hall, probably the size of at least four gyms or more. And I had settled in January to have a tournament there. Well, we got up Saturday morning. It was snowing. It was already a couple inches on the ground. I said, "What? I'm going to be showing up there. I've lost my butt on this tournament." We had 450 competitors to show up. 450.
Well, go ahead, sir.
From all over, and that was the big tournament in those days.
Well, before we take a short break, I want to take the listeners back into Ernie Deeb. He is the founder of the AKA, the American Karate Association, and also the AKS, the American Karate System. I've got a big shout out to Mike Sullinger, who has been my dear friend and history general. And you know, Mike is he's been down for a while. He's actually the police chief down south here in Texas. But what a great guy and part of that lineage. But Ernie actually contacted me about 2 years before we lost him in the train wreck, and actually donated 80 hours of his film and some personal documents and autographs that he gave to the vision of the museum of what I had with the history generals. And I'm very proud that I got to get that from him. And I know that you miss him, and the sport karate world needs to know who that was, because now John Sharkey, who is just becoming a history general for the Sport Karate Museum Archives, he took over that. And what he's done with it has been tremendous, amazing. His Warrior Cup has just turned into a major, major event. But, you know, you took American karate and made a statement with it, you know, against the grain of what people thought karate was. People think karate being, you know, Korean, Japanese, Kung Fu being Chinese, of course. And, of course, you know, they have this vision of what karate is. American karate is simply taking the best of the things that you felt was good and apply it to whatever the establishment and the structure you had. And with that said, I'm going to take a short break and take care of some of my sponsors, and we'll be right back. And stay tuned. Stay close, Mr. Chapman. I'll be right back, sir.
All right.
Here's your chance to take your martial arts to the next level. Train with the Masters August 11th through 13th, 2017, in Dallas, Texas, held at the Sheraton Hotel Dallas. Hawaii has been the melting pot for different cultures of the Pacific Rim for many hundreds of years. Food, customs, family, language, and martial arts all have been mixed together and come out stronger and better. This year's theme is the Hawaiian influence on martial arts through custom martial culture, dress, and fashion. We will have special guest instructors that represent the Hawaiian influence, including Professor Alakola from Maui, who will be sharing the Apila style of Kempo from Brother Abe Kama Hoahoa of Hawaii, and also teaching Haka. Kuma Michelle Manu, who will be sharing the family style Lua from Grandmaster Solomon Kalyuma Kaliwalu, including both empty hand and weapons. She will be teaching her famous superhero experience. Self-defense classes where female participants dress up as superheroes. Women do not miss this. Grandmaster George Lim will be presenting the Hawaiian Kempo with his wife, Grandmaster Patricia Lim. Kilis Hula Halu will be demonstrating and teaching hula on several occasions. And world-famous tattoo artist Tricia Allen, Ph.D., will be teaching a class on Polynesian culture and doing 4 days of custom Polynesian tattooing. Shoot fighting seminar taught by Grandmaster Bart Vail. MMA fighter Chuck Liddell's coach, John Hackerman. He runs the Pit Gym and guided Chuck Liddell to UFC light heavyweight status and has coached many other MMA fighters. To top off the weekend event, we have the Kempo International Hall of Fame. This banquet dinner event includes awards for the newest inductee members of the IHOF Recognition Award for its existing members. Nominate someone for the Hall of Fame on the GOE website. We will then contact the nominees, and the verification process will continue, with inductions being held at the Gathering of Eagles and International Hall of Fame Banquet on August 12, 2017, in Dallas, Texas. This is the Kempo International Hall of Fame, begun by Grandmaster Al Tracy in 2007 in conjunction with the Gathering of Eagles. This Hall of Fame is a Kempo and Kempo-based system and is based on nominations from the governing board of the IHOF and also from the IHOF members themselves. This will be held in conjunction with the Gathering of Eagles in Dallas, Saturday, August 12, 2017. Held at the Sheraton Hotel Dallas, honoring the past and present brothers and sisters whose collective contributions are many. and whose inspiration will continue on into the future to illuminate the path for those whom inspire to follow in their footsteps. GM Al Tracy, sponsors and vendors at the GOEKIHOF. This event is a perfect opportunity to get in front of hundreds of owners, instructors, and influencers from martial arts schools across the nation, Europe, and from around the world. There will be hours of networking opportunity throughout the three-day event in conjunction with special branding opportunities and IHOF media partners. For special media partners, contact Sabra Gerard at Sabra, and that's S-A-B-R-A at S-G. PR.com. For sales, contact Wes Davis at WesDavis65@gmail.com.
Well, we got a couple of shout-outs tonight, I have to say. First of all, a big shout-out to Master Jenny Pless for being nominated and being inducted into the 2017 Who's Who in Martial Arts. This lady is an amazing lady here in Houston, Texas. She works with children. She's a children's advocate, teaches at all the recreation and parts. She's the head referee of a major Taekwondo event every year, and she performs for the Living Legends Celebrity Roast yearly for what we do, showing her Kung Fu. She's also a Taekwondo master. A big shout out to Jenny for making the book. Now, this is a really, really special moment. A couple months ago, I was contacted by Jim Harrison's daughter, Tanya Brazos Harrison, and she wanted to make Missoula, Montana, the city that where Sakura Warrior Arts is at, the top martial art facility in the city. Now, as you know, there's many, many schools in Missoula, Montana, and there was many schools, but Sensei Harrison's school is probably the oldest. So the campaign started, and we started voting, and throughout the 2 months, all the history generals that voted, everyone that put up with my emails and phone calls from early in the morning to late at night, thank you, thank you, thank you. Mr. Harrison School was voted as the number one martial arts facility in Missoula, Montana. And we thank everyone that voted for him. He is turning, well, he turned 80 years old this year, and we are having a Harrison tribute, family black belt tribute, September the 29th and 30th, with conjunction with the Living Legends in Houston, Texas. It's going to be an amazing day. Tor and Ty Harrison, his sons, are going to be coming in doing a special seminar of Harrison Martial Arts. Jim Hartley, Jim Anderson, George Clark, quite a few people, Al Hilsebeck, Fred Wren, all these incredible people from Mr. Harrison's past will be there to support him. And the first Big Kahuna Awards will be given out. 2, J. Pat Burleson's Natural Fighter Award be given to Mr. Jim Harrison, and Mr. Harrison's Natural Fighter Award be given to Mr. J. Pat Burleson. This is something that you don't want to miss. We have a feature set in our program that I think is very important, because in 19 years, you can imagine the things that we've collected at every Living Legends and the work that we've done to collect the memorabilia and the history. So in each segment, we add just a few of the lists so you understand and keep up with some of the incredible stuff we've got. And I like to name a list of things that we're doing in this segment. And every show, we will list some of the things that we receive or we've gotten throughout the years. Starting off tonight with signed D-top of the Orphans from Uganda, donated by Mr. Jamie Cashin. Movie posters and Sidekicks movie script. And the Force 5 movie script donated by Jamie Cashin of Chuck Norris. Keith Vitale's letter to the museum and a special letter to Mr. Ray McCallum. World champion Mr. Ray McCallum's top 10 groin cup sign that he wore through the PKA fights. Mr. Robert Hartfield's Kung Fu top. The signed book of the dojo by Mr. Peter Urban. Rest in peace. Roger Green's famous checkered Tracy's key top that he wore all those years in fighting. The original phototype safety gear from 1972 that was sent out by Mr. Reed, given to me by Mr. James T. Tony. Rest in peace. Chris Minshew's, Chris Minshew's National Black Belt League World Championship Jacket and 1997 Championship Gold Ring. Masabushi's Ward signed picture, world champion John Morris, gold medals in a beautiful, beautiful case. Kyoko Fukada's, rest in peace, red belt, 10th Dan diploma, and scroll. Shinsei Obata, rest in peace, Okinawa scrolls that he hand-painted and given to the museum. Mr. Carl Geis, rest in peace, personal portrait that he gave to the museum. Ms. Lou Dwyer, Angel's cat statue that she had for so many years that she donated to the museum. Bigfoot's Daryl K. Stewart's arbitrator, NBL black belt jacket signed. Tom Shaky Levack signed pictures in the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame plaque. These are just some of the things, and stay tuned each week, and we'll go over more of the incredible stuff that we've collected through the years. At this time, I'd like to take a moment and answer two of our emails that have been sent in. And, you know, this is really important that we answer these because people ask questions. They don't know everything. I don't know everything. But my history generals do. That means that basically if I don't have the answer, I will make a phone call or put an email out, and I will find the answer for you. And that's the assurance that you have that if you ask a question, we will find the answer. So tonight we start off from Wilbur Manning, and he emails me from New York, New York. His question is, what are the cultures of martial arts, and how are they broken up to do sport competition? That's a great question. Well, there's Okinawan, and there's China, and there's Japan, and there's Korea. And because of the people like we have tonight in this interview, like Mr. Chapman, there's American culture. And the Amen. Levels of competition is around the world. I mean, China has their own competitions, in particular their sport of kung fu is called wushu, and it's branched out throughout the world. Of course, Japan is best known for karate, Shotokan karate, but the home of karate, though, is Okinawa. And this is the light debate that's always been on around the country, around the world. But people understand that Okinawa was the home of karate do, and Japan formed Shotokan and other forms of martial arts and karate from the Okinawans. Now, Korea is mostly known for taekwondo, and they have their own competition. In fact, best known is what they did in the Olympics, where they were accepted as a game in the Olympics. But it's not like what's going to be in 2020. When karate do has been accepted as a spectator sport, taekwondo in the Olympics for the past few years was just kicking. You never saw any hands at all. And it was basically built on what they call trembling shock. Karate do is much different. It's grab, takedown, sweep, punch, kick, stomp. And I think the general public is going to be mesmerized by kata because they've never seen that before. American martial arts, like I said earlier, is that the people who have created that have simply taken their base, which is basically they all started in a base culture, and they took the best out of each one, and they formed what they formed to create American martial arts. So it's a conjunction of many things. You can't really put your thumb on it. But I can promise you that almost everyone that is legitimate and built it up to be where it is today, they all had a strong culture to get them started in. We have a saying here on this show that we created on the show that, you know, we all have Asian influence. Sport karate was born in America, and we celebrate those legends and pioneers that did that. So I hope that answered your question, and we're going to the second one. From Sally Oldfield, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Tallahassee, Florida. Whatever happened to Wonder Boy? Young kid from the East, Mitchell something. He beat a lot of top players as a teenager. Am I correct? Well, you are. His name was Mitchell Barbaro. And Mitchell Barbaro, he fought on the circuit when he was 16 years old. And I can't really put the number on the people that he fought or he beat, but he did beat some top names and big names, and he was known as Wonder Boy. Now, as he got older, he turned into an entrepreneur and one of the first people, along with Fred Ferrari and Steve Shepard, who created the Atomic Shoe, or the workout shoe for martial arts. And Atomic, spelled O-T-O-M-I-X, was an apparel company that went on to make shoes. And basically, Mr. Barbaro was inducted into the Taekwondo Hall of Fame along with Mr. Corley. And right now, as far as I know, he's playing golf. he plays a lot of golf, but he's doing well. And thank you for asking about Mitchell Barbaro, the Wonder Boy. Not many people remember that far back, but he was an incredible fighter. Well, Mr. Chapman, you there with her?
I'm enjoying the show, Gary, very much.
Oh, well, you are the show, sir. Let's get back. Let's start it right off with the Legends Name Game. This is one of my favorite segments. And this is where I say a name. Reason why we call it Parts Unknown. And you have a few paragraphs or a minute to talk about that person and how you really feel about that person. And I'm going to say a name. Tell me how you do it. It's called the Legends Name Game with Mr. Sam Chapman. The very first one, Bobby Tucker.
Bobby Tucker. He is unique. He loves life. He's battling. He's not giving up. He's facing a lot of difficulties in his life. But you know what? Bobby Tucker is Bobby Tucker. He doesn't let anything get him down. He was a hunter and a fisherman. He still does that. He was a karate, just, I don't know how to say it, superstar. Yes, but
yes,
that wasn't his entire life, you know. That wasn't his entire life, and ours should be ours. You know, how do you live your life if it's to be known as one particular thing? My life is lived, and I think yours too, as well, as we have to realize who we are, created by God, and he's using us where we are for his glory. And Bobby has come to realize that, and others as well. Bobby Tucker is a very unique person. As I was telling you in a pre-interview, he won the first Joe Louis Perpetual Cup in Baltimore, Maryland. We went there in 1979. The director-producer of the tournament had a heart attack, was in the hospital, and no one in his organization wanted to start that tournament. So Joe Corley and I got together and started it as late as it was at 2 p.m. that afternoon. Bobby was fighting for grand championship at 4 a.m. Sunday morning.
Wow.
4 a.m. So it was a test.
Well, I can tell, just add one more thing, that Bobby didn't, you know, he didn't care about the front covers and the pictures and the phototype. I know he was a hunter and fisherman and proved that when he built that first house, the A-frame house that we all went out there and saw what he did. That was pretty amazing what he did with that house.
Absolutely.
But Bobby Tucker, God bless him, and we wish him the best, and, you know, in our hearts are praying for him every day. Okay, the next one, Joe Corley. Mr. Joe Corley.
Joe Corley. Gentleman Joe Corley. And let me tell you, I've seen that young man. I could call him young because I'm older than he is. But I've seen him jump in the air. I know. I've seen many times jump in the air and turn as if he was just floating in the air and kick people in the head with spinning back hook kicks and spinning back reverse round kicks. It was awesome. He had had an unfortunate back injury back in the early 70s, which limited his sparring ability. But I tell you what, one of the greatest fights I ever saw was Joe fighting Bill Wallace. He went nine rounds, the first man, I guess the only one ever did that with Bill. But he looked great in the ring. He gave Bill one for his money.
Yes, sir.
And he's a gentleman all the way.
He's been instrumental in everything that that the museum has done and been a mentor. And like I said, he was an incredible fighter. I have two pictures of him particularly that he gave me. One where he's actually three pictures. One where he's facing the guy, and then the next picture where the guy is knocked out, and the next picture where Mr. Corley's on his knees turned around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, Mr.
There
Bill
was,
McDonald.
There was a tournament. He taught in in Chattanooga, and this one person there was not his fan, and they were fighting, and he kept sticking his tongue out at Joe and making fun of him. And Joe scored a point on him, and this guy came on in at it, and Joe popped him. He wore safety glasses, the other guy did. Joe hit him so hard and knocked the lens out of the glass and went up to hit the top of the gym.
Okay, how about Mr. Bill McDonald from North Carolina?
Bill and I were same, you know, Greenville, North Carolina for Bill, Greenville, South Carolina for me. We had pretty good black belts, both of us. They would often meet as in first place in every tournament we went to. He had Demetrius Edwards. He had Ronnie Ryle. He had Charlie June. He had Tommy Lopez. I could name my stable that almost matched his as far as ability. But it was always a toss-up when it came down to the, you know, who's going to win. I had great respect for Bill. He did a lot for karate and American karate there in East Carolina.
Yes, sir. The other person that kind of made up the Sika group, Larry Reinhart. Tell me about Larry.
Larry, let me tell you, he was poetry in motion. He would fool you to be his. He was a big man, but I tell you, he moved like a ballet dancer. He threw spinning hook kicks, spinning wheel kicks. Had great hand techniques. He very seldom lost.
He had those dimples. I remember he kind of looked like a baby, but he was, you know, but he could fight without a doubt. Kelly Bob, this is one of my favorite people in the whole world, and very instrumental in how I was known as a judge because I copycatted him movement by movement, attitude by attitude. Mr. Jerry Pennington.
Yes. Jerry moved like a mongoose. He reminded me of he was just so stealthy. He would close in on you and be on top of you before you knew what happened. I mean, I really loved to watch him fight, as well as Glenn Keeney. Glenn was always, he was called the fox as well, because he was another sneaky guy who had you before you knew you'd been had. He was a great fighter.
Well, you know, years back, 20, maybe 25 years back, I was going through the stuff and the vision of what I wanted to do with the Sport Karate Museum Archives, and I was going through some old pictures and found a picture of you, and just for some reason I opened the back of it and out popped a letter from this man, and it was a letter stating how he really enjoyed me judging, and that he would give credit to Sam because he brought me to that tournament. I want to say it was Columbia or somewhere, but his name was Albert Church. Tell me about Mr. Church.
Yeah. Albert Church was the father of karate in Charleston. Charleston, South Carolina. One of his top black belts, or the top black belt, was Ron Cherry. And Ron had several students. Matter of fact, Tommy Seeger was one of his students. And I believe Ray had some experience with him too, Ray Thompson. But they had a pretty strong stable of fighters there, but they were not I would say the best fighters because of the style they taught. They were very traditional. And there was a fellow there in Charleston who asked us to sanction his tournament. He was one of the church's people. So we did in SCKA, so went down and supported. And I was fighting middleweight, and later on I told that the guy that I knocked out was supposed to come in the ring and put me so I couldn't fight anymore. So they're going to show me how to fight in Charleston. So that was an experience.
So you were
I went 2 years in a row.
Mr. Chapman, black belt from Charleston, Milwaukee. I've got a couple more. Mr. Ray Thompson, we talked about, you mentioned him earlier. He was probably one of the toughest brown belts I ever saw. Tell me about Ray.
Ray was a great fighter. Matter of fact, Tommy Seeger came to me in, 74, 75, somewhere in there. I'm not exactly sure. It's been years ago. from Charleston to take karate from me, and they did, and they both did well. They had experience already, and both were already black belts. But Ray wanted to test under me, and he did, and he did so well that we promoted him to second degree on his first black belt test. He's a great fighter, a great strategist. Look at the fighters today. His son, Wonder Boy Steven.
Yes.
Is a great fighter. And as Tommy Siegler as well, is down in North Augusta area, has some great fighters that are just tearing the divisions up.
Well, you have another friend of mine that's very close to the museum, one of the history generals. He's like, I was adopted from the Texas guys. You guys adopted him from Texas because he comes from the Allen Steen lineage. Mr. Arthur Heller. Tell me about Arthur.
Amen. Oh, boy, Art, let me tell you. He was mean as a rattlesnake in the ring. He cut you no slack. He was a pleasure to be here. He still is. I see him every now and then. We'll see each other at some of the gatherings, but I really miss him being here.
Did he have that white beard back then? It wasn't white, but did he have a beard back then, too?
He did.
I've never seen him without a beard. He did? Okay. Yeah, that's kind of his trademark. Well, I appreciate you playing the list.
There's a couple of other guys, too. Gary,
I'm sorry. Lawrence Huff. I was going to ask about Lawrence Huff.
Lawrence Huff was another gigantic heavyweight, 300-plus pounds, but, again, moved like a graceful ballet dancer. And the great hand and foot techniques, very deceptive, virtually won every time he stepped in the ring in the black belt division.
Yes, sir.
He followed the SEKA circuit. Thinking about Harvey Hastings, one of the later SEKA directors. He's up in Virginia someplace. And
He wrote for Black Belt Magazine back in the day when I was with you.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Yes, and we communicated before he passing, and great article writer and great memory for Black Belts. But you know, Sensei, you know, talking about those incredible people and you know them personally, that's very special, and that's what makes the Legends name game not just a cliche. It means something when people are listening. They know the person. I'm asking about this person. They know about them sincerely, and this has been very special. Now, one of the things I mentioned earlier is that you are a kids advocate. You work with kids every day, special kid needs, and particularly one gentleman that you've had since he was 6 years old, Carlos Howard, who still runs your karate school. I met him at an NBL event back in the 90s in my so-called last part of my heyday. And I remember I was running Garrett, my son, through some drills, and I was doing the famous Sam Chapman drill of going, help, help, help. And Mr. Howard came up to me, and he said, that sounds familiar. I said, well, I learned it from Mr. Sam Chapman. And then I saw the patch, and he was your boy, and we became friends. The journey of working with kids at that young age to adult level, like you've done with all of us, Bobby Tucker, Carlos, and kids you're doing now, when did you see that was the gift that you had? And how have you improved it through the years, through your spiritual growth?
Gary, children need guidance. Children need discipline. Children need structure. We have virtually abandon our children to the electric media, to cell phones and all the other devices where they have no interaction with other youth except by a device that doesn't give them really, really interaction at all. Very seldom do you see them eating together. I've seen pictures on Facebook where children have been taken, teens have been taken to beautiful museums for some of the most beautiful art in the world, and they're sitting around with their cell phones texting one another or texting other people, not even aware of their surroundings. Things have changed, and we need to get back to the basics. moms, fathers, and mothers need to be fathers and mothers, not friends to their children. And they're not doing that today. I had parents who bring their kids in because they've been bullied at school. Or I had parents who bring a kid in because he was a bully at school and needed his butt kicked, and that's what he got. And we're not seeing that anymore. Very seldom do you have a parent that was not, very seldom you see a parent that would not blame some other person for the decision that their children are making. Oh, you don't understand. When we do a black belt test at my studio, my speech is this. I don't know what you did last week. I don't know what you're planning for next week. It's today. What you did today would tell me when you get your black belt or not. And I've had parents come up, well, you don't understand this. I don't need to understand, ma'am, sir. What they did today is what we're going to judge them on. Now, we've gotten away from that. We won't make excuses. And children aren't taking responsibility because parents aren't placing it. You know, there's kids today don't know how to wash a dish or turn on a washer and dryer. They don't have a clue. Some can't even tie their shoes. I've got girls that are 10, 12, 13 years old. Takes them 5 minutes to put the shoes on. That's wrong.
Wow. Yes, sir. And what you're doing is really making a change in some of the kids' lives. I thank you for that. You touched my life at a very young age, and I still do things today because of your influence and what you did for me. Now, you do something today, this moment, which is really changing the look of what Hall of Fames have done. And if we sat down like we did 40 years ago and talked to each other over Chinese food and say there's going to be all these 10th degree black belts and all these Hall of Fames in the country, if I said that to you, you'd probably make me – well, you'd probably beat me up. You'd say you're just imagining all that. But that's what's happening in America. But you guys have done something very special with the South Carolina Black Belt Karate Hall of Fame. You set standards, and you're doing things that are really different. And you and Keith and Bobby and Marty Knight, Mike Genova, who I'd like to ask about him too. But basically, you guys are something different, and that's very impressive, like I mentioned earlier in the announcement. What do you see for the future of any Hall of Fames? And maybe they can copycat what you and Keith and Mike have done to make these things mandatory, like the criminal background check and 25 years and the things that are mandatory.
You have to have some kind of standard, Gary. It's not – we didn't do this to make money. It's not something
yes,
you go travel around the nation and around the world to hold a black belt who's who and to get people to come out. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to recognize those people in South Carolina who are doing the job, who are living the life, if they have come in from the outside from another state, they have to be a resident here for at least 10 years. With that 25 years experience as a black belt, they have to be able to verify any claims they make as far as victories or what they've accomplished. We have to be able to check that out. So we want to make sure we get people who are who are really representing the martial arts and the best light. And that's what makes a difference.
But again, the background check, no one is doing that. You're the first one to ever do that. I've done my research. Even Black Belt Magazine didn't do a background check. That to me is very impressive because it sets a standard. Anytime you do something first.
I can name you people within 30 miles where I'm sitting right now who teach karate and have had charges against them for molesting children. So,
yes, sir.
We need to do background checks.
Yes, sir. But I hope it sets the standard for any future Hall of Fames that are probably, I don't see how there could be any more because there's thousands of them now, but that's another subject.
Yes.
Now, your toughest fight, and I put you on the spot Sunday when I did the pre-interview, and I know you had a lot of great fights, and you know, you were a middleweight rated, top rated champion, but I asked you who your toughest fight was, and you said a magic name from Columbia, South Carolina. Talk about him a little bit.
That would be Mike Genova. Mike and I have fought several
poodle.
Times.
Poodle.
He was just, yeah, poodle. All he had was a sidekick.
Yeah.
Runaway sidekick. And a little flippy back fist. And
timing. He had pretty good timing, yeah.
That's right. That's right. But we had fun. We,
yes,
we
sir.
Fought
and he was your toughest. He was your toughest out of everybody, huh?
That's right. Not because he was hitting hard, because he had that timing. If you didn't start it just right, now I have to say this: my fighting, my timing, and everything else is 100 times better today than it was back then, because with age and experience and observation and attempting and trying, and now if I think it, I've done it. Okay, you can't sit back and wait for the opportunity. When it exposes itself, you have to do it. You can't say, I'll get it next time. It has to happen then. And when it happens then, it'll be successful.
Well, you were also an innovator of the from point karate to the full contact stage, and you created what they call earlier group of fighters called the Pink Panthers. And Mike Giliva was actually your very first full contact fight, correct?
That's right. They had the championships out in L.A., I think, in 74. Well, Joe Corley and I and others here began to plan for some fights here in South Carolina or in this area, and we began to train. We trained 6 months for these fights in Columbia. We were in the best shape. But you know what? Once you step in a ring and something you haven't done before, it's like stepping in with 100-pound weight on your back. You have no clue. But those first fights, they were like, you should have seen Bobby and Keith Vitale going at it. They're like two buzz saws.
I've seen that fight. I've seen that fight in black and white. But one thing I'll mention about Bobby and Keith, it's really cool, and I love telling this story. They fought 20 times, with Bobby winning 10 and Keith winning 10. And that's how they wanted to end it. But, man, you can just tell in the eyes of Keith, when he mentions Bobby's name or I mention Bobby's name, he lights up like a pinball machine. You can tell they love each other so deeply. Yes.
Bobby was beating Keith, and Bobby took time and went and found Keith, not at a tournament, but out.
I heard
and tell him
story.
How to beat.
Yes, I heard that story. Yes, he did. I remember that story, and Keith told it to me directly. Wow. You know, a few years back, I did something pretty cool. I had the vision of putting together 100 fighters from all across America, and it's called The Gathering. And you and your lovely wife, Cookie, came, and I got to give you a John Wayne picture. I know that was cool. But we got to honor you with some incredible people, and you were part, and actually you were the original, one of the original History Generals, but you got to see the vision. What was it like coming to the Living Legends and The Gathering, seeing some of those fighters from way back when? We had everybody there. What was that like for you, Sensei?
It was, I would say, one of the most it's indescribable to see all the people. Many of them were legends to me.
Mike
Stone, people.
Everybody. That was cool.
Yeah. Now, I'd been around in Texas. We took a team out there in 74, I believe it was, and we beat everything out there. We had they had Big Daniel on their team. They had, I think, Dan Anderson.
Was Greek
on
the
team?
Dan Anderson. Was Greek on that team,
and,
too, wasn't he?
Who's that? Greek?
Greek. Demetrius Avanis.
I think he was. I'm not real sure. I fought him in
Andy
in,
Felter.
Andy fought. He might have fought. I'm not sure who he fought. But Andy was there. Andy was fighting. He was the image of Richard Jackson with that dash punch and everything.
Yes, sir. But you know, the Gathering was really cool because it did put 100 fighters together from all across America. But you know, since being a history general for the Sport Karate Museum, what does that mean to you on a personal basis?
It means more than you'll ever know, Gary, that people I respect have some respect for me, that they see what my heart, where my heart is in things. And
yes,
that
sir.
you can't buy that. You can't buy that. Now, the way I think mentioned this about working with kids, how I got there, in 1990, I went on a mission trip to Rio de Janeiro, and my role there was to do karate demonstration, which I did in various places, even on the beach there, to draw a crowd. Then we would share about Christ and the gospel. So when I came back, I said, there must be something else for me to do here. And I opened the paper, and there was an ad for this group home. I went and answered the ad. The doctor who had founded the group home asked me where I'd been because he needed me 6 months ago. He put me to work immediately teaching the staff how to handle the kids who were out of control. And within a matter of months, he put me in charge of developing what we called the Solidarity Center, which is our intake unit. That was at our home in Marietta. And now we have group homes in Marietta on Hartcut Road. We have in Pickens, have in Simpsonville, in Hendersonville, North Carolina. We have some of the highest managed group homes in the United States. And I was able to write one of the programs and go down and run a program called Excalibur near Furman University. We have a 10-acre campus down there. I worked there for several years. And from there, I moved to Pickens, started the boys program. And 9 years ago, I moved to Fountain Inn to work at our facility called Venice, which is a girls program. I've been there for 9 years, and it's a challenge every day. You walk in, you lock yourself into a place, and you have anywhere from, in my pod, I got 10 girls, ranges from 9 up to 14. I got 2, sometimes 3 female staff to help me, and you don't know what you can walk into, what you can get into that day. It's just whatever happens.
You're an amazing individual, and I just got to say again from the heart how much I love you, and I appreciate you being a part of my journey and being a part of this radio blog. I know that I've got a couple calls on the line right now, so I'm going to kind of end it with this, saying that I appreciate your service for our country. I appreciate your time and love, what you have for children and for the future of martial arts, what you're doing for the Hall of Fame in South Carolina. And you're just one of these guys that I look up to so much as a hero, and I've always considered you to be a father figure to me. If people would like to talk to Mr. Chapman, we're going to open the lines here in a few minutes. I'm going to see if Brother Jesse's on the line. Ponte Bowen, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
What a great interview with a great, great individual. Anybody on the line that would like to talk to Mr. Chapman, to Mr. Bowen or myself?
I'm opening lines up right now.
Okay,
the lines are now open, so if anyone would like to ask a question or make some comments, the lines are open.
Hello, Sam?
Yes.
Hey, this is Gary Landry. How you doing?
Hey,
wow,
Gary. I saw you on Facebook the other day. How you doing?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. Man, I have been listening to this blog for the last, 40 minutes or so, and I have laughed. I have had such an awesome time listening to this. It is such a pleasure to hear two of my friends from so many years ago and be able to hear and reminisce on those good times. Really something.
Wow, Gary Landry.
Let me say something about Gary. Gary,
yes,
let me say something about Gary Landry. This young man,
sir.
We put him into the men's division when he was 13, 14 years old.
Yes,
he
sir.
Worked, he wiped them out. Okay, he was a top junior in the PKA for two consecutive years. I mean, entire nation. He was a tremendous fighter, not only in point competition but also in contact knockout. Ranked in the in North American title, so he's not a little kid anymore.
Remember, I was his punching bag. He learned to act through our hits that we did, and Gary Landreth, pound for pound, was an amazing kid, fighter. But man, he could act too. It was so much fun with him and Blaine Silver.
Blaine,
and what was the girl? Real pretty girl. Was it Shelly?
Shelly Taylor.
Okay, Shelly Taylor. Wow. So, Gary, what are you doing now?
Those were some fantastic days. I am up here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm over here.
Okay.
I work at a center for addiction treatment. So I am a resident support staff member at Miracle Hill. So we have approximately 80 men in the facility that we work in. And so I minister to these men. I've surrendered to the call of ministry. From my own hurts, have an opportunity now to give back to men that have suffered from some of the pains that myself have went through. But I am so blessed today, you know, just to know that I've had an opportunity to have some great friends. Man, martial arts, you know, and karate as a whole, such a huge part of my life. I mean, my entire identity was wrapped up in it for 20 years. And today, you know, not active in martial arts today, but, man, let me tell you, every chance I get, I'm constantly looking towards the different – I see Carlos Howard often downtown, and, you know, Carlos is one of my favorite people. Carlos was, matter of fact, when I started – Carlos Howard was 5 years old when he started taking – and Sam had actually put me into a – See, this is the kind of man Sam was. Sam would trust you right off the bat, and he knew what he was looking at. So when I was like 10 years old, he put me in there with the kids that were, you know, 5 years old teaching martial arts. So, man, I tell you, it's just awesome to be able to listen. I'm gonna kind of shut up because I want some other people to talk, but it's great to listen.
Before you go, Gary, before you go, I have a picture of you in my morning devotion book. Are you holding your cat, and I pray for you every day.
Well, Sam, I know you do. And, you know, you are on my very foremost and first list of someone that I really want to talk with in the next real soon days coming. Matter of fact, maybe just in the next week or so, I'd love for us to have an opportunity to get together. And Gary, I have to tell you, man, it's been so many years. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Blessings to you, brother, for what you're doing. With the karate world and everybody across the United States,
because I
love getting the contacts, you know, daily. I watch them. I look at the information on Facebook and online of what you're doing. And my hat's off to
you.
Hey, if God blesses me, if it's His will, someday I'd love to come out to Texas and take a look at what you've established out there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that, and just the blessing of having you and Sam on the phone. The reader, I mean, the listeners and the fans, to be able to talk to you two guys. That's what this show's about. Is anybody else on the line? Yes, I'm sorry.
Sam Chapman, for all intents and purposes, was as close to me as my own father. And I just reverence Sam. I love him just as if he's my dad. And I guess of all the men I've ever spent time with, if you were to put them all side by side, I would say I'd probably spent more hours talking with Sam and riding the different parts of the country than any other human being on the face of the earth. Wouldn't you say that's true, Sam?
I believe it's true. You are my son.
Amen.
Man, I love you. I love you so much.
We love you, Gary.
I love you too,
Gary.
Hey, blessings
this
to you,
really
fellas.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Bowen. Is someone else on the line? Or we're running a little late tonight, but well, that was worth it right there, Master Bowen. You got to understand that Gary Landreth was just one of these incredible young kids, and to be able for him to call in, of all the thousands or hundreds of people that know Mr. Chapman, for him to call in and talk, that was God's blessing tonight. And God bless this show so much for being able to put us together like this. And I'm going to close with this saying, and of course, Mr. Bowen, if you have anything to say on your upcoming stuff, if you'd like to contact the Sport Karate Museum, please www.sportkaratemuseum.org or call me personally, 713-483-0476. Don't forget our event coming up September the 29th and 30th, the Living Legends 25th anniversary. I love you, Sam Chapman. Thank you so much for being here tonight. It just meant so much. And Hachi Bowen, it's your turn, sir. God bless you.
Well, that was a great show. Again, you know, with Grandmaster Chapman. You know, it goes back. Some of my earliest martial arts tournament was down in Greenville, and you know, I definitely do appreciate you for the opportunity to go to your event and different things that you've done for sport karate. Everyone, our program is really about bringing the legends together, and this is what the Who's Who book has been about. And that's what the buzz still is about, the Who's Who book. We're getting ready for the 2017 book, so we're still looking for great legends. Like I said, the 16 book that says it's going to be really hard to top. So we're looking to discover those legends in the martial arts so we can feature you on our show. Again, we have a 24-hour radio station now, so we've had so many amazing things to happen. Don't forget that the next Who's Who event will be in Washington, D.C., at the Gaylord Resort and Hotel Convention Center. And so you can go to our website, which is www.whoswhointhemartialarts, and make your nominations. And you know, Mr. Chapman and the martial artists down in North Carolina, South Carolina, in the Charlotte area. In a few weeks, we're going to be hosting the Europa Games Sport Karate Championship. Sport Karate has an opportunity to be on a festival level, which gives us a great opportunity to present the Sport Karate. So people from all different sports and opportunities to be able to see it. Last year, they had over 30,000 people to show up for the Europa Games without Sport Karate. So this year, we want Sport Karate to be one of those events that is hard to forget, and I will be the director of that event. So if you would, Mr. Chapman, you know, give us your support and, you know, tell us all about the martial arts in that area about what we're trying to do and come out and be a part of it, because we have a lot of young people just getting started off, and hopefully in the next 30 or 40 years, they'll be looked towards to be legends also. But, you know, remember those two events, and we have a lot of events going on. So, you know, you go to listen to our radio station, which is www.martialartsmastersradioshow, and this is our new platform, and this show will be, again, on that program on tomorrow, so check it out. If you have any questions, you can give me a call at 919-489-6100. Any last words, Professor Lee?
I would like to say thank you, Hachi Bowen, for your vision and what you've done with the radio show, and particularly what you've done with the network. I'm really excited about that, and I encourage people to go and just listen to the format. We've got a vision to touch people around America, and you're the gatekeeper of this. I may be the gatekeeper of the archives, but you're the gatekeeper of the future to recognize people that, like Jenny Pless, who's going to be in the book next year, so well deserved. So thank you again from the museum and from me personally for what you've done. And Sam, are you there, sir? I mean, at the end of the show, I said Sam, and I promised I wouldn't say that. But Sensei, are you there? Okay, we must have lost Sam, but God bless him. I didn't want to call him Sam throughout the show because, you know, he's so personal. But Sensei, thank you so much. Thank you, Master Bowen, and good night.
Coming to Charlotte, North Carolina, the 2017 Europa Games Sport Karate Championship, your road to the UFC International Fight Week in Las Vegas. Come check out the largest health, fitness, and sports trade show in the world, taking place in Charlotte, North Carolina. The 2017 Europa Games Get Fit Sports Fest. The event will be held on April the 22nd and 23rd, 2017. Bring your entire family. It's open to the public. Over 500,000 square feet of expo activities. Over 100 vendors sampling and selling activewear, vitamins, health food, sports equipment, anti-aging products, and much more. You'll have live sporting events, wrestling, karate, powerlifting, bodybuilding, grappling, just to name a few. We even have a kids zone with free prizes for the little ones. We'll also have Black Belt Grand Champion Forms and Fighting cash prize. Plus, the AMAA Grand Champion will represent the AMAA Sport Karate League at the Battle of Atlanta in Atlanta, Georgia, with a free entry. For more information, call area code 919-489-6100. Jesse Bowen.